Hello and welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. Mary Steves here alongside our popcorn enthusiast, Dr. Tim Elmore. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Mary.
Tim, it's a joy to welcome to our podcast a dear friend, mentor, and expert in leadership, Dr. John C. Maxwell. In addition to being a dear friend, Maxwell is a number one New York Times bestselling author, coach, and speaker who has sold more than 25 million books in 50 languages. He has also trained more than 5 million leaders. In 2015, he reached the milestone of having trained leaders from every country of the world. Tim, I'm going to hand it back to you to formally introduce your friend and mentor, Dr. John C. Maxwell.
Great. Thanks, Mary. John, thank you for taking some time and being with us today. I'm very grateful.
I'm grateful, too. Great to be with you, Tim, and your whole crew.
Yeah, you betcha. You and I were together recently, and those numbers may have expanded that Mary just shared. It's amazing the impact that the John Maxwell Company and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation are having. Weren't those numbers even more significant?
Well, there are 28 million now, but who's counting?
Just a slight difference.
Yeah, that's right. Give or take a million. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. What you know, numbers when they're small are very significant.
That's right.
The bigger they get, you know, it's kind of like, hey, it's, you know, 25, 28. We're doing well. People are growing from our resources. Hopefully, they are, just like they're growing from yours.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? Well,
it
John,
sure is.
Before we jump into the theme for our questions, I want you to just take a minute and talk about what you're up to right now. You're working internationally, focusing on transformational leadership, and some of your listeners and readers and some of ours might not know exactly what that is. Talk about what that is and the significance, particularly in Latin America right now.
Well, we trained leaders in every nation of the world, and when I finished training leaders with our organization, I came to two conclusions. One is it's wonderful to train 5 million leaders, but number two, a trained leader doesn't necessarily become a transformational leader. Mm. A transformational leader is a person that affects people in a positive way until their life is beautifully, radically changed. Mm. And so I said, okay, now that we've trained these leaders, let's go back and let's see if we can turn them into transformational leaders. That's what we're doing right now through EQIP. But in the meantime, we began to have presidents of countries reach out to us and ask if we would come into their countries and through roundtables teach leadership values and try to bring the countries into a transformational stage. That was a great challenge for me. And so I said, let's try it. And with our John Maxwell team, we have 13,000 coaches in 140 countries of the world.
Wow.
We started going in first to Guatemala. We've now trained almost 300,000 people in roundtables, have seen radical transformation in that country. And we're in Paraguay. It's been exceptional there. Been there less than a year. We're about 130,000. We've trained there in roundtables. We start at the top, the seven streams of influence. We start with the government and then education, business, media, arts, family, religion, and start at the top influencers and work our way down. What really excites me, though, Tim, really excites me is our partnership we're having with you and Growing Leaders, and because you have done such an exceptional job in connecting with the youth of America, and you're on high school, college campuses all over the country. And we were asked by the Minister of Education in Paraguay to develop curriculum for high school students based on leadership. And immediately when he said that and asked me if we could do that, the first person I thought of was you and of course, your organization, Growing Leaders. And I said, yes, we will. And I looked at Mark Cole, my CEO, and said, call Tim. And so we're going to partner together, and Growing Leaders is going to help us with the material in year one. And then in years two, three, and four in the high schools there, you're going to be able to develop it. And it will be a Growing Leaders project. And I see us partnering in the beginning to get everybody started. But I see, Tim, the possibility in the next 5 to 8 years, literally Growing Leaders could be having high school curriculum in several countries in Latin America. Because yeah. What we discovered is we have now 22 presidents of countries asking us to come in and do transformational leadership. What we discovered is once Guatemala did well, the other Latin countries wanted to follow and said, we want that too. And then Paraguay, and now we have about 2022 to pick from for the next one. So I think it's going to, become a movement, and you're going to be a part of the movement. You're going to be catalytic in it. You're going to be core to it, and to partner with you in it is very exciting to me.
Well, John, you know, I've tried to express this to you. We are honored just to lock arms with you, and let's make a difference in these countries. It's going to be exciting. Now, what you just said really sets up my next question. Some people may not know that are listening that you and I shared a couple of decades together. I started as an employee under you in 1983, just out of college in San Diego, and then later at Equip when you moved the whole kit and caboodle across the country to Atlanta, Georgia. So you hired me right out of college, and you took a chance on me. You knew it was a chance. I had worked a little bit with students, but I was still a student when you met me. And I believe I owe so much of my development and productivity to your mentoring over the years. In fact, last time I was with you, if you remember, I said, you have stock in all the young leaders we're training.
Yeah.
I believe that's true. So when you think about that experience and the many others, you had a lot of young leaders on that staff. What do you look for as you invest in young leaders? And what flaws are you willing to overlook? I kind of want to help the listeners. What do you look for, and what are you willing to say?
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah. Well, for all those on this podcast, I just want to say, I wish you could have seen Tim when I saw him. I'm telling you, that boy is really grown and developed. I mean, I took him right out of college, and whoa. That's the reason I'm such a believer in the potential people is I know what I did with Tim. Now that I'm having fun with you, buddy, you only kid the people that you truly love. It's a great question, and I want to answer the question because on this podcast, people really are wanting some meat to chew on.
Sure.
When you ask me, what do I look for in young leaders? I look for specifically three things. I look for them to have a desire to make a difference. Here's what I found. If you show me a kid that really wants to make a difference in their world, they probably are dreaming way too big, and they're probably hallucinating a little bit. But here's what I know. If you can find some kid that's got a great passion to really make a difference in the world, to me, that's the starting point. Passion is the fuel for everything. And so I look for that, and then I look for teachability.
Yeah.
If they're going to come along and they want to be on the team, they have to have a real heart to learn and desire to grow and to have that spirit of teachability within them that they just are like a sponge. And thirdly, I look for giftedness. Because leadership is influence, but leadership is influence in the area of your giftedness.
Yeah.
You don't influence people in things you're not gifted in.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, I look for them. And what are you gifted in? And for you, example, Tim, you had a huge make-a-difference mentality. I was attracted immediately to you because you were going to go win the world literally in about a year, and I convinced you to take a little longer than
that's
that.
That's right.
But I loved your passion. You were always taking notes, sitting at my feet, what's next, and you're highly gifted as a connector and communicator in the early years. So that's what I look like. Now, there are some flaws, as we all have flaws. I love when you said, what flaws do you overlook in young leaders? My first thought is, what flaws do you overlook in old leaders?
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
We're all flawed. But there are three, I think, specific flaws of young leaders that I overlook. One is their idealism. They're just idealistic. They just think it's going to be bigger and better than it really is. And I'm not trying to be negative. It's just that's where I was. Also, wisdom and life and experience and things such as that after a while help you to kind of level out a little bit. But I overlook that because I would rather have somebody going to want to win their world than somebody that doesn't even think they can win themselves.
And so
I overlook idealism. I overlook mistakes. We all make them. In fact, I've always said when you're young, you want to start somewhere where it's small so that the mistakes will never be told on you because we all make them.
Yeah.
I make them, you make them, we all make them. So I overlook that. And then I overlook the fact they don't see the big picture. I think that they can't see the big picture. It's not like they're bad. It's just that you can't see the big picture when you're young. It's an impossibility. You lack the experience and exposure to see big picture. So those are the flaws I overlook. There are three flaws that I don't overlook in the youth, and that is an entitlement mindset. When I see a young person, they basically feel they're entitled. I want to tell them that there's nothing given to in life.
And
you come into life kicking and screaming, and it's tough, and it's uphill all the way, and you have to make your own way, and you have to prove yourself, and you can't demand somebody to respect you. You've got to earn that. And so when I find a highly entitled person, it's hard on me because I just say, look, you're going to have a very tough life. Life's not going to hand you what you think they're going to hand you.
Yeah.
Secondly is breaking trust, just not having the ethics or the level of trust or where you can depend on a person and sense that they have a sense of integrity. And the third area is if I feel they don't value people. Because the leadership here, this is a true statement. Leadership gets old real quick if you don't value people. It's too hard, Tim. It's too hard unless you love people.
Yeah.
You got to love people. It's the only thing that keeps me in the game.
Yeah.
If I lose that tomorrow, it's all over. It's gone. I'm gone. I've seen too much and I've been too far. So I want to see the value people. So that's what I kind of look for in youth and flaws I overlook and flaws I don't overlook.
Yeah, that's rich. I was just thinking as you were sharing, John, one of those flaws that you're willing to overlook was one that you saw in me. I did not see the big picture. And if you remember, that first evaluation you had with me, you shared several things that I did well. And then you said, now there's a few things you need to work on. And I had never been told that I need to work on anything. And I think I said, I beg your pardon. And one of them was, you need to see beyond your department. And it was a rich, rich time because it was the first time I really came to grips with the fact that I had some clear weaknesses that I needed to overcome. Now, the good news is, when I said, how do I do that? You said, watch me this next week. I'm going to show you. And I got to watch you model it. But my point is, I think you practiced those on me. I think I may have had all three of those things that I was idealistic. I didn't see the big picture. But you did know I love people. And you showed me what a leader looks like and the impact it has on culture to an organization when the leader loves his or her people. That was just gigantic. Yeah.
And you've got to, and Tim, I know we got to get these questions, but you also got to love the people that you're mentoring. You don't mentor them for what they're going to bring to you. You mentor them for what they're going to bring to the world.
Yeah, sure.
And there's a difference between those two. When I mentor you because of what you're going to bring to me, it's always a negotiation. Yeah. When I mentor you because of what you're going to bring to the world, that's a gift to the world. And so, anyway, you got it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. John, I have frequently used the terms as we work with educators, coaches, administrators, parents, these terms, timely and timeless. So the listeners have heard those terms. Timely means I'm very current. I know what's going on around me in our culture today. I'm able to play off of that, and my listeners know I get what's going on in the world. Timeless is obviously, here's some principles that are going to work wherever you are, whenever you live. I feel like, John, one of the number one contributions you made to my life was helping me get some principles to live by that will work however old I am. I want you to talk about that. I want you to talk about how you balance the two because you do need to keep up with the times, but you are foremost in my mind a person that's got some principles you've lived by when you were 22 and then 42, 52. Would you just talk about that? I'm just going to stop and let you talk about that.
That was a tough question that you asked, but I love the question. Some of the best questions are tough, so I really kind of gave it a little time. And I go back to the 21 Laws of Leadership. That's the best-selling leadership book ever written, and the reason it is because those laws are timeless. I mean, they worked 200 years ago, they work now, they'll work 200 years from now, and that's what makes it work. And so when I think of timeless, I think of being able to be acceptable to all genders, all generations at any time, regardless of culture. And we took the 21 laws and spent, I was bouncing questions off of you when I was writing that book. It took us about almost 2 years to come up with the 21 laws because we wanted to make them timeless. But I would also say I'm almost 70, and the older I get, the less certainties I have. When I was young, I had a lot of certainties. If you just asked me, I'd tell you boldly. I don't have as many certainties today, but even though I have a lot less certainties, I'm more certain about what I have left. And one of the things when we're talking about that timely, is in 1975 I came to the conclusion everything rises and falls on leadership. And for 40 plus years now, that's never wavered. I still view today, everything rises and falls on leadership. It's a fact proven by history. Now, the reason I say that is that's timeless.
Yeah.
But in the when you get to the timely subject, you know, I'm married to principles, but I'm not married to methods. And it's kind of like I'm getting older, but I don't want to get old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what am I going to do to be timely? I mean, I'm 70 years old. How can I connect? How can I stay timely? Well, I'm going to be teachable. It goes back to the question you asked me about young leaders. There's never a time for a person not to be teachable. I mean, it's not like at 40, you say, I've learned it all. I'm no longer teachable. So I have to be teachable to be timely.
Yeah.
I have to ask questions to be timely. I've got to constantly go, especially to younger generation, and ask questions because they're the ones that are going to lead me to the water. No question about it. That's they're living in it. That's their life.
Yeah.
And I think also to be timely, you just have to believe in the younger generation. You know, one of the things that makes me really mad at people my age is they look and they talk about the next generation or the generation two down or whatever, and they act like it's all going to the dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're the last great generation. And thank God we were here. And when we die, it's all going to blow up. And I don't think that's true at all.
Right, right.
And I think there's a once I believe in the younger generation, guess what? I'm going to invest in the younger generation.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to stay current. So how do I balance the two? I think it's simple. People change. Principles don't. And here's where you get in trouble. I watch this happen all the time. When leaders love principles more than they love people, they cease to be timely. And I love people more than principles. I always have. And so what I do is I love the person. And I look for the moment in their life where I can apply the principle. See, if I love the principle or the person, I'll try to bring the person to the principle instead of bringing the principle to the person.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there's that balance. And so if people change, sure they do. So you got to be timely. You know, that's the only way you can connect with them. But principles don't. But love the people more than you love the principles. Does that make sense,
Tim?
That's
rich. That's very rich. In fact, I think that's such a great handle for our listeners, many of who work directly with students and are probably, I'm guessing, waffling sometimes. You know, we want to be cool and you want to be hip. In fact, John, what was racing through my mind was you and I in our earlier years in our careers were in a vocation that you saw leaders running to jump on the latest bandwagon and it lasted for a year and a half, or they didn't do their homework right and didn't work. And then they said, well, that stinks. And but it's that zigzagging back and forth rather than saying, I've got some anchors that I know will work. And it's just sad when we don't lock into some of those.
Well, it really is. I've always been a little amused by trendy until the other day when I thought about it, Tim, and I thought it's probably because I've never quite been with it.
Yeah. You and I both, I think.
Yeah. I think, you know, because I just thought, am I amused by trendy because I see it kind of as fleeting and passing, or is it just because I'm not with it? But, you know, trendy is for today and timeless is for every day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so my whole thing is, are you going to live for today? Well, I'm going to master today.
Yes.
Because that's the way that tomorrow is going to be a great day is for me to master today and make it hopefully a masterpiece. But timeless is every day.
Yeah.
And so you can take any of the principles. Leadership is influence, for example. Well, when I started leading in my world, it was top-down leadership.
Yeah,
it was one person leading, and basically it was authoritarian, and whatever that top person said, it filtered down, and everybody else kind of got in line. And then it kind of went from there to, well, okay, a leader needs other people to help him. So we got a team, but we didn't get a team of leaders. We just got a team of people that helped us do the lead. We were still the leaders. And then it kind of evolved to, well, okay, let's have a leadership team. Let's have more than one person lead according to what their gifts are. And then we really flipped that thing and took that pyramid and turned it upside down, and we got into servant leadership. And so there's all kind of changes, trendy stuff happening. But here's what I know. Whether it's 45 years ago, top-down leadership or servant leadership today, guess what? Leadership is still influence.
Yeah.
Nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah.
It always has been. It always will be. Now, how you influence people, whether it's through one person or through groups of people, that's not the question. That mm-hmm. depends on what the trend is, what's happening today. But the principle is timeless. Everything's going to rise and fall in leadership. Leadership is influence. Those yeah. things don't change.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, and I'm reminiscing right now, John. I remember seeing leaders, not young, but just established, seasoned veterans even, that didn't know quite how to distinguish the two, the trendy
yes.
or the whatever. And they would try to imitate you and some of your, you know, style. And the style wasn't what you wanted to imitate. It was
the
timeless truth. But, you know, yep. they do. They meant well. But I remember early on having, in fact, I just was doing an article earlier today or an interview for an article. And I talked about being under your leadership. And I said, I had to learn in my late 20s what John Maxwell was doing that I could pull from and replicate in my own style, but not try to be his style. That was liberating
for
me because you and I are a little different there. But I'm going to be the best version of myself when I pull the principle and find a way with my own flavor to practice it.
That's beautiful. And I see that happen all the time. They'll see a very, you know, maybe charismatic leader or whatever,
yeah.
and they'll start to pick up their kind of charismatic habits.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just doesn't fit.
No.
It just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
The principles work, but you know, the personality, it's got to be you. You and I are going to be responsible for to be the best you that I could be or me that I could be and you. But we're not going to be responsible for trying to be someone else, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so John, I'd like to now talk about leading change. It's one of the primary acts, I think, that separates leaders from managers. Managers are great implementers and they manage well, but leaders are the ones that are building the team, running ahead. You've said this for years. What must a leader know and do to effectively lead change?
Well, you know, the thing that I operate under for many years that was not true is I thought leaders liked change and followers didn't.
Mm.
So it was always leaders trying to get followers to do something they didn't want to do. And I finally came to the conclusion after working for leaders for several years that leaders don't like change any more than followers unless it's the leader's idea.
Yes, yes, that's true.
And so here's the point. When change doesn't happen, it's not a follower's problem. It's a leader's problem. Mm. When change doesn't happen, it's because one of the leaders in the group felt that they wanted to protect turf or protect reputation, whatever they had ever done.
Yeah.
And so I think the first thing we have to just all understand is that as leaders, we're not that hot on change either.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless it's our idea. I think that helps us kind of get realistic in our foundation where we work off of. And Tim, one of the things I've mentored you on, you know this as well as do, probably teach it better than me anymore, is that, you know, there are three times people change.
Mm-hmm.
Change when they hurt enough, they have to.
Yeah.
When they learn enough, they want to. And they receive enough, they're able to. And so what I got to be asking myself all the time as I'm leading people, are they hurting enough? When they're hurting, they'll mm-hmm. make change. They just really will.
Yeah.
What are they learning? What are they being exposed to that will allow them to accept change? Yeah. What are they receiving? What am I resourcing and equipping them with that will allow them to make those changes? Because leaders are to be change agents. It's
yeah.
what we are
yeah.
to be. But if we're going to change them, we're going to change them around one of those three times: hurt enough, learn enough, or they receive enough.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking at the person more than I am the change. And here's where the challenge comes. Leaders know what change needs to be made, but they don't understand it's only people who make the change.
Hmm.
So change is not a change issue. It's more of a people issue. And the question is not, how do I bring about change as much as is, how do I find common ground? Because in finding common ground with a person, now we have something in common that allows us to make the change. You see, most people, when they think of making changes, they think of the differences
yeah,
between
yeah.
them and the people. And that's too big of a gap.
Mm-hmm.
And the differences will always keep people resistant to change. Instead of saying, what are the similarities? Where can we start? And if we start somewhere that's on common ground that we both are going to win from, then we can make that change.
John, I was reminiscing as you were talking, thinking about people that I know that I have led or tried to lead. And if I was able to connect with them, empathize with them, listen to them,
sure.
make them feel heard, it lubricated any friction that might happen with the change. It wasn't like they were, you know, it was just, I don't think people have the innate need to get their own way. They do have the innate need to be heard and related to, and I think you just do that so well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great statement. I love that. They do not have an innate need to get their own way. They just have an innate need to be heard. That's beautiful. I totally agree with that. And that's where the asking questions, the listening, the commitment to total common ground is essential in change.
Yeah. Well, John, that statement I learned as a dad. My children do not have the innate need to get their own way growing up. They did need me to say, I hear you. Now here's what we're going to do. But, you know, there's a little bit of a relief then. Okay, at least he heard my idea, you know.
Of course, so, of course. Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes. That may be in my next book, Tim.
Okay.
I'll give you credit, buddy.
All right.
No royalties.
There you go.
Credit.
That's right.
Credit.
There you go. John, I want to take the last few minutes and talk about what's going to happen this next June. You're going to be joining us at our National Leadership Forum on June 22nd and 23rd. And as you know, our theme is fast forward. I'd like you to take a minute and talk about fast forward. Talk about the future that you see and what you believe leaders must know to venture well into the future.
Well, first of all, Tim, I'm really looking forward to being with you.
Good.
And this is beautiful. Yeah, you know, is there anything more beautiful than to join hands with a person that you've poured your life into and then watch that person, you, grow and be successful and change lives and be transformational in your own leadership. And then, you know, for the mentor to come back to the student and them to work together is like coming home. You know what I mean? It feels right. And to be able to be with you and to help you in growing leaders is going to be a tremendous honor for me. So I'm looking forward to it. And when you told me about your theme being fast forward, I thought, oh my gosh, those are two of my favorite words.
Yeah.
Fast and forward.
Yep.
I mean, think about me. I mean, I love to go fast and I want to go forward. And it reminds me, of course, of when I grew up and, you know, the organization I grew up in, when they weren't progressive at all. In fact, they were very unprogressive.
Yes.
Their definition of progress is moving backwards slowly.
And
I got to thinking, moving backwards slowly against versus Tim's fast forward.
Quite a contrast.
But here's what I want to say about it, because I love that theme. And I got to thinking about it a little bit today. And let me say something about fast. Let me say something about forward that I think is very pertinent to what you want to accomplish in leadership. As you look in the future, Tim, fast is faster. I don't know how fast it is, but let me tell you something. Look in the future, it's faster. It is never going to be slower or the pace it is today. Technology won't allow it. The information world, social media, it's an impossibility. We can never go back. So when I think of fast, all I know is that tomorrow fast is going to be faster than it is today.
Yep.
Now, here's what I think is interesting, and I would love to, we don't have time on the podcast today, but maybe when we get together, we'll work this a little bit more. Forward is shorter. It's a lot shorter. You see, when I started in leadership and we started talking about planning for the future, guess what we talked about? We talked about 10-year plans. Let's lay out a 10-year plan. That was the long range. Medium was 5 years, and short range was 1 to 2. Now let me tell you something about the forward today. Long range is 1 to 2. There's no such thing as a 10-year plan anymore. The 10-year plan would be so outdated, you and I'd look like a fool if we tried it.
It'd be ridiculous.
So fast is faster, but forward shorter.
That's good.
And so if fast is faster, as a leader, people need security. So what I would tell leaders as they look at the future is to be able to provide security to people that it's okay, we're going to make it, I'm with you, is a tremendous gift for people, because as fast gets faster, people become more insecure. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is participation. When you look at the future, it's got to be participatory. Yeah. It's got to be where people get to have their thoughts and their ideas. Yeah. Again, at least, as you said a little bit earlier, heard.
Yes. Yeah.
And it, by all means, as you look at, there's got to be authenticity, because fast is so fast. You've got to have trust. Again, Stephen Covey, the son, not the father, wrote a great book called The Speed of Trust.
Yeah.
And his whole thing was that trust allows you to move things quicker in your organization, because you don't have to look around saying, now, are they telling me the truth or not?
Yeah, right, right.
And so when you look at fast is faster, you got to have a sense of authenticity. And I think you have to have a sense of values.
Yeah.
If fast is faster, then my anchor has to be stronger.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
Because I don't have time every day to try to figure myself out. I've already figured out what my values are and what hill I'm going to die on, what I'm going to believe, and fight for.
Yeah.
And so as I think of that, fast being faster, those are just some thoughts that just came to me in the process, because it's a great subject, and I know we don't have time to really delve into it much, but those are a couple of thoughts I had too.
Well, they're rich. I love them, and I can hardly wait till June to kind of unpack that even a little bit more. John, this has been so rich. I'm very grateful that you carved out some time in your busy, busy day to just to add value and hopefully whet our listeners' appetites to the forum in June. So thanks again, my friend and mentor, for being with us.
It's totally my joy.
Dr. Maxwell, Tim, thank you so much for the knowledge and insight that you shared in the past few minutes. If you'd like to learn more, we would love for you to join us at this year's National Leadership Forum. This will be an opportunity for many, many people from around the country to come together, and we'll get to ask John Maxwell our own questions, because he will be there as one of our keynote speakers. So I know that our Growing Leaders team is very excited for that opportunity. To learn more and to register, please go to www.growingleaders.com. Tim, one of my favorite parts of our podcast is our next part, which is the practical applications. Talk to us and share with our listeners, what's the takeaways from this conversation with Dr. John C. Maxwell? How can they apply what we just talked about to how they're leading the next generation?
Thanks, Mary. You know, I think I want to focus in on one takeaway. I want to go back to Dr. Maxwell's thought about being teachable, and I want to really apply it to us as seasoned veterans, people that are established leaders. We're adults. We're either teachers, coaches, parents, employers. And we think that we've already learned, and we need to teach them. But Dr. Maxwell talked at the end about fast forward, and he said something very smart. He said, fast is going to come faster, and I think we all intuitively know that. And the forward is going to have to be shorter. We can't plan 10 years out. We got to plan a little bit out and then be adaptable. We have an adaptive plan here at Growing Leaders. So if that's true, we owe it to ourselves and to everyone in our organization or our school to be teachable. I want to talk about you getting with your young, your students, your kids, whatever, and you being the student, you being teachable, you being the one who brings the questions, not the answers to the conversation. What would happen if you as an educator, a coach, an employer, a parent, met with your young and they knew that you initiated the meeting, so you want to meet, but you brought questions with you, not answers or commands or retributions on them? And what if, let's just say, you were a coach and you asked the question, how do you think we should prepare for next week's game? You tell me what you think we should do. And you create ownership in them because they're coming up with a very plan that you're going to implement in practice. What if you were a teacher? And you ask the question, how could we use some of the apps that you've just bought to learn the subject that we're trying to get through right now in American history or science or whatever? But you engage them using their language, their methodologies that they're comfortable with, their natural habitat, if you will, but to learn something you know they need to learn, and you've got to teach. But you start with a question, not an answer. What if you were an employer and you said, how do you, as a 20-something, how would you market our products or our company to your generation if your friends were the customers? What would you do different? But all of those at least start a conversation where you are in the teachable position, not them. And they're probably going to be floored. In fact, they may faint on you. But once you wake them up, start that conversation and allow yourself to earn the right to speak into their life by listening to what they're saying. I go back to that point, Mary, that I mentioned earlier. Students don't have the innate need to get their own way. They do have the innate need to be heard. What if you were the hearer? That's my challenge.
That's fantastic. Thanks, Tim. I just so appreciate the conversation that we've had today. It was even fun to just take a walk down memory lane for you and Dr. Maxwell. And to our folks who are listening, thank you for joining us on the Growing Leaders podcast, and we'll see you next time.